Welcome to Rise from the Ashes. Our podcast looks at various issues for families. We'll be talking with attorneys about personal and legal concerns having to do with divorce, custody, and parenting time. There are also a few topics about letting go, moving on, and new beginnings. Please keep in mind this podcast is only to inform and help to understand legal and personal issues as they relate to family law. It should not be considered as a replacement for a qualified family law attorney. When in doubt, please contact a professional. Rise from the Ashes, focusing on matters of the family, because family matters. Hi, and welcome to our podcast, Rise from the Ashes. I'm David Braddock, and I'll be the host for this podcast, and we're talking today with Amy Rotering, an associate attorney here at Mundall Law. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, David. How are you?
Very good. Today's topic is on delegating parental responsibility. What exactly are we meaning by that?
Another way of putting it is, who can take care of my children as a parent when I'm not able to do it myself? Under those circumstances, normally you would say, well, get one of your parents to do it or hire a babysitter. What I'm talking about in this context is if an emergency of some kind comes up, or even a pre-planned event comes up, where as a parent you're going to be out of town or unavailable to your child for anywhere from a few days to a few weeks or months. And your child is going to need some care other than getting to school and back. Maybe they need to go see a doctor. Maybe they even need to be enrolled in school if it's the end of the summer. And the parent is not there to do that, but a babysitter or any other third party is not going to have the legal authority to act on behalf of that child.
What exactly can a parent do when they are unable to care for their child or their children?
The context, first of all, that I'm going to talk about today is short-term. There are other remedies available when long-term care is needed, but I'm just talking about a few weeks or maybe even just a few months. So there's two options that parents have. The first one is called delegation of parental authority, and the second one is called designation of standby or temporary custodian. And that's a mouthful of words that I've just given you. So I'm going to talk about both of them one at a time.
Well, let's just take them one at a time. What about delegation of parental authority? What are we meaning by that exactly?
Well, it's a document. It's a piece of paper that a parent signs that lets someone else that the parent designates take care of your children or child when you can't. The person that you give permission to do that is called attorney in fact. Now, some of you may be familiar with the term attorney in fact when you're signing a financial power of attorney. So this is a similar type of responsibility, but instead of taking care of someone's finances, you're taking care of someone's child. And what that delegation of parental authority document does is it gives permission for someone to make decisions about your child. What we call it legally is that you step into the shoes of the parent as a third-party caregiver. That means if you are the person that the parent designates, you can take the child to the doctor for medical treatment and make decisions about what kind of treatment that child is going to have, and can also either enroll the child in school or even excuse the child from school for things like illnesses or medical appointments or other things that come up in a child's life. There are limits to it. It does not allow a caregiver to give permission to decide things like adoption or marriage. The other thing that's important to know as a parent is that the delegation of parental authority does not take away the rights of the parent. The parent can revoke that document anytime, and they can make decisions at the same time as the third party. It's just a way for someone to be able to care for the child while that parent is unavailable.
So essentially, it's a temporary document, is what you're saying.
It is. And it's good for up to 1 year. And then thereafter, if for some reason the parent would need to extend that, they can do that. Or else my recommendation would be if it's going to last longer than that, that they speak to an attorney about other options that are available to them.
And that was my next question. The best way to initiate the activation of a document like this would be how?
Well, you definitely want to speak to an attorney about that because there are different ramifications that can occur once this document is signed. It's important to know that because in this type of document, it becomes effective immediately as soon as the parent signs it. And so that third party is given quite a bit of authority over that child. So you want to make sure that you know what you're signing and that you know what kind of permission you're giving to that third party.
Right. And I would imagine all of the parameters that will be necessary in the actual parent's absence.
Absolutely.
Now, you mentioned the other type of document. So this is delegation of parental authority. What was the other one that you were talking about?
The other one is called a designation of standby or temporary custodian. So again, that's a mouthful of words. And this document has some things in common with the other one. For instance, it's only temporary. And it allows a caretaker to care for a child in the parent's absence. And it also does not supersede a parent's authority to act on behalf of their child. Two of the main differences between this designation and the delegation of parental authority is that, first of all, a caretaker under a designation of standby custodianship has a lot more authority over the child than they would in a delegation of parental authority. I would call this document one that you would use in probably a more serious situation. Where I'm going with that is that the authority of the third party does not transfer as soon as the document is signed. It only transfers to the third party upon the occurrence of what's called a triggering event. And a triggering event is defined as a specific occurrence that is stated in the document by the parent that empowers the temporary custodian to assume the powers, duties, and responsibilities of the parent. So they really are stepping into the shoes of the parent. So it goes beyond taking them to the doctor or taking them out of school. They're actually making decisions on behalf of that child as if they were the parent. A lot of times, the circumstances under which parents will sign a form like this is if the parents either die or become disabled to the point where they can no longer care for their children.
Are those the best examples of what a serious event might entail for a document like this to be required?
It doesn't have to be that serious, but that's most commonly what this document is used for. The other difference between this one and the delegation of parental authority is that the authority of the caretaker lasts only 60 days. The 60 days begins once that triggering event occurs. So once the triggering event occurs, that authority automatically transfers to the third party. And the other important difference is that once that triggering event occurs, the designation document must be filed with the court.
How does a parent know which document of these two types to use depending on the serious situation that they might be in and having to care for these children?
Well, David, it's very important that a parent with questions such as the one you asked come in and speak to an attorney about what their options are. While on the surface the documents may seem very similar, and in some ways they are, every situation is different, every family is different, and the legal ramifications of these documents are very different. So it's important to talk to an attorney about your specific situation so that the attorney can advise you as to which document works best for your specific situation.
What are the types of situations, for example, in delegating parental responsibility, the first document, that might be more applicable?
I would say that would be for something less serious, such as you're going to be taking a vacation without your children, or you're going to be going out of town on business. That's probably one of the most common scenarios I see. If a parent travels on business often and they leave the child in the care of a trusted family member, such as a grandparent, it's really nice for that grandparent to be able to take the child to the doctor or to go into school and see how that child is doing if the parent is unable to do that. The designation of temporary custodian is more recommended for death or serious illness where the parent will not be able to make a decision for the child in the immediate future.
Who would be the person that would be requesting that particular designation to be initiated if the parent is unable to?
It would be whoever the parent designates in the form. When the parent fills out the form, they have to designate who the children are, who the custodian would be in that situation. And they also have to get the permission and the signature of the other parent, because normally what would happen, for instance, if mom is unable to take care of the children because she was in a car accident, let's say, then dad would be the automatic choice. Now, if there's a situation where that parent has already passed away, or if they're not present in the child's life, if their parental rights have been terminated, or if that parent is unwilling or unable to make decisions for the children. Let's say the other parent's out of town on business and something happens to mom. That's when that third party designation can come into play until that other parent is able to care for the child or until a court is able to make a decision if that's what ends up happening. And a lot of times I will recommend a designation of temporary custodian as part of the estate planning process. So when a parent designates a guardian in their will, that guardian is usually the same person that's designated in the designation of temporary custodian. So that when, unfortunately, that parent dies before the child reaches 18 years of age, that custodian can immediately begin assuming responsibility for the child until the will is able to be probated and a permanent custodian is appointed for that child. The important difference between the two is that the designation of temporary custodian does not take effect until that event occurs, whereas with the delegation of parental authority, it takes place immediately and is good for 1 year. The designation of temporary custodian gives the parent a little bit more control over when that third-party caregiver can exercise their authority.
It sounds like the delegation of parental responsibility would be initiated by the parents when they know that they're going to need this third party, and that it takes place immediately and it's got that term of 1 year. How about if there's just a normal situation where the family wants to drop the kids off at grandma's and grandpa's? Do you really need a document like this?
Well, if the kids are just staying with the grandparents over the weekend, probably not. However, if grandma and grandpa are taking care of the children on a regular basis, maybe every weekend or every other weekend, it might be a practical tool for the grandparents to have a document such as that, just in case the children get sick over the weekend and need to be taken to urgent care, or they fall and hurt themselves. Then that would be something that the grandparents would probably want to have on hand, just in case.
What about the involvement of the two parents? Can one parent just go ahead and have something like this signed and not regarding what the other parent's involvement might be? How does that all work?
It depends on the document you're signing. With the delegation of parental authority, if the parents are married, actually in either of these documents, if the parents are married, then both parents have to sign the document. When the parents are not married, under the delegation of parental authority, one of the parents may sign it, but they have to either hand deliver or mail that delegation document to the other parent within 30 days of signing it.
So that the other parent has been informed of what's going on.
Yes, the other parent is entitled to be on notice that this form has been signed.
And this initiating parent, they would have to have sole custody in that case?
No, not necessarily. The only time that the other parent doesn't have to be informed is if the other parent doesn't have any parenting time or if their parenting rights have been terminated. A parent can't give away what they don't have, if that makes sense. So what that means is, let's say mom has parenting time Monday through Friday, and dad has parenting time every weekend. Mom cannot dictate what a third-party custodian during dad's parenting time. She can only designate that authority during her own parenting time.
I see. Okay.
Now, the nice thing about this form is if something should happen during dad's parenting time and he needs that third party, let's say it's the grandparents, to come and take the children to the doctor, they can do that because dad is aware that this form exists.
I see. And the circumstance would require a third party to be in charge.
Yes. So it does work under those circumstances, but the other parent has to be informed except under limited circumstances. In the designation of temporary custodian, this situation, both parents must sign it. And there's only limited circumstances as well under which both parents don't have to sign it. Those would be those same circumstances we talked about before, which would be if the other parent has, obviously, if they've passed away, if their parental rights were terminated, or if their whereabouts were unknown. And there's other circumstances too, which is why, again, it's important to talk to an attorney about these documents, because there are a lot of nuances to each one.
Well, it's nice to know that there are resources for family in case they need to have a third-party adult be able to take care of their children under some of these special circumstances.
Absolutely. It's important for families to have these resources available to them. And it's just as important for families to come in and speak to an attorney about the nuances of these documents so that we can talk with them and help them choose options that will work best for their unique situation.
Thank you very much, Amy, for all of these great insights on these special documents for caring for your children.
Thank you, David. It was great to be here today.
You are listening to Rise from the Ashes, the podcast channel that takes a careful look at all things having to do with legal procedure within the family law process. Rise from the Ashes is sponsored by Mundahl Law, who specializes in assisting families and individuals through the legal process with respect, dignity, and caring. Mundahl Law is dedicated to helping people to solve their legal problems. You can visit the Mundahl Law website at mundahllaw.com or call to schedule a consultation with one of their qualified family law attorneys. Rise from the ashes, focusing on matters of the family, because family matters.